Would you please stand, remain standing for a moment after the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a few minutes.
For the Corrections Officer David Mendez Sr.
Thank you. This is the public comment period. The first one we have is Terry Platt.
Thank you, members of the board and Mr. Robinson. It's good to be here today in a little bit different role. It's been some time since I've had the opportunity to talk with you all. Retirement has been very good. I am back in the world of work now as the executive director for the Disability Resource Agency for Independent Living. I just wanted to reintroduce myself, and let you know a little bit about our agency. We provide critical key services and resources and referrals for individuals with disabilities in our communities, both here in Stanislaus County and San Joaquin County, and as far away as Calaveras and Tuolumne County. I'm excited. This is my fifth day on the job, and I'm excited to come here today also to let you know that that our constituents are very concerned about public transportation. It is a cornerstone for independent living, and we were excited to read in the paper about the ad hoc group that was supportive of transportation issues concerning the elderly and the disabled. Our agency is very committed to that public transportation. We would look forward to working with you to find solutions to the issues of public transportation. We believe that you got a wonderful staff, you've got the right people working on that, and we're committed to helping you and help our constituents address the issues and provide better and more meaningful access to public transportation, and our agency is committed to making that happen and working with you. I want to thank you. If there's any questions that you might have, I'd be happy to entertain those, and I look forward to communicating with you all in the future about services for independent living for disabled and elderly folks in our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Chairman Mayfield, if I might just respond a little bit,
yes.
Terry. Glad to hear you're back on the payroll.
Thank you, sir.
You might be interested to know that on June the 5th, the group that got together last week regarding updating these services and identifying new sources of funding, on June the 5th, we'll be meeting again here in this building at 10 a.m.
I believe it's in this room.
You're going to meet in this room?
I believe it is.
Okay.
We would appreciate the opportunity to sit at the table and have those discussions with
you.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Miguel Donoso.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. I was in a meeting last week with the president, Mr. Glover and Mr. Monty, in a meeting. In the meeting that was called to discuss the issue of the senior citizens, the tax and the transportation issues and the needs. But the surprise, not to surprise me, was that no members of the audience was taking notes in official or unofficial meeting. No one from the office of Mr. Glover or Mr. Monty. No one from the office of the STENCO executive director was there. The director of the transportation of the county and the director of the city of Modesto was there. But no minutes. Nobody was taking official minutes to record what was saying there. So only the newspaper of Modesto was there present. So the two gentlemen make some promises to do something. And the promise became broke anytime, whatever the politician need to fix something. But to me, it was very disappointed to see how was the manipulation of the staff, and at the same time, how was deceived to the seniors regard to the issue. The issue was, it's in the money to prepare the proposal to submit it before next June to the money of the year 2009. So it's close to 9 months. The issue was, where is the money? The money was there, explained by the Stenco's executive director. So my question is, how can we not be serious and to take the concept in writing and to have minutes, whatever the gentleman was saying or whoever was explaining from there, to have some kind of notes or minutes that we can dispute legally or not legally? Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Miguel. Judy Lawson.
Good morning. My name's Judy Lawson. I live at 4 in Mobile Village, outside of Oakdale in the county jurisdiction. I'm a Stanislaus Mobile Homeowners Advocate, and I request the following be submitted for the record. This is about the $2.5 million block grant. I want to know, will the $2.57 million be divided equally among the five supervisors' districts, or will the allocation of funds be decided by income, population, or some other special method? Because the personal property of mobile homeowners is used by the county as part of the low-income housing stock in order to qualify for this grant and other state and federal funds, will the approximately 2,000 mobile homes in the unincorporated areas of the county have their fair share of this grant allocated for the specific purpose of revitalizing the blight so evident in many of these small communities? In order to avoid some of this grant money getting redirected into a pothole by a perceived idea that there is no need, there is a great need for these funds in the Stanislaus County mobile home community. Today, this board will consider allocating $700,000 to refurbish 12 houses at an average cost of $58,333.34 per house. How many mobile homes does this board suppose could be refurbished for $700,000? Consider the numbers of qualified mobile home owners who would once again be able to enjoy safe and healthy living conditions. Let's be very clear about whose property is used as part of the county low-income housing stock. In all but a very few cases, our mobile homes do not belong to the mobile home parks we live in. Park owners do not own nor live in low-income housing. Mobile homeowners do. They are our personal property, and we deserve our fair share of all grants for low-income housing. Due to the lack of rent stabilization, the ever-escalating rents imposed on the disproportionate number of low-income, fixed-income, veterans, seniors, and the disabled residing in mobile homes in this county, there is nothing left for the maintenance and refurbishment of our homes. The money that we could have used goes to the park owners through unrelenting rent increases to use as they please. Should this board decide against allocating mobile homeowners their fair share, then the county needs to stop using our personal property as part of the county low-income housing stock. You can't have it both ways.
Thank you. There's a public hearing this morning at 9:15. Stick around, and we'll, maybe some of those questions could be answered. Thank you. Deborah Harper?
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper, and I'm currently residing in Modesto, California. I'd like to read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Okay. On December 10, 1948, the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted and proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the full text of which appears in the following pages. Following this historic act, the Assembly called upon all member countries to publicize the text of the Declaration and to cause it to be disseminated, displayed, read, expounded principally in schools and other educational institutions, without distinction based on political status of countries or territories. Preamble. Whereas recognition of the inherent dignity and the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace in the world. Whereas disregard and contempt for human rights have resulted in barbarous acts which have outraged the conscience of mankind, and the advent of a world in which human beings shall enjoy freedom of speech and belief and freedom from fear and want has been proclaimed as the highest aspiration of the common people. Whereas it is essential, if man is not to be compelled to have recourse as a last resort to rebellion against tyranny and oppression, that human rights should be protected by the rule of law. Whereas it is essential to promote the development of friendly relations between nations. Whereas the peoples of the United Nations have in charter reaffirmed their faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, and in the equal rights of men and women, have determined to promote social progress and better standards of life and larger freedom. Whereas member states have pledged themselves to achieve in cooperation with the United Nations the promotion of universal respect for and observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms. Whereas a common understanding of these rights and freedoms is of great importance for the full realization of this pledge. Now, therefore, the General Assembly proclaims this Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations, to the end that every individual and every organ of society, keeping this declaration constantly in mind, shall strive by teaching and education to promote respect for these rights and freedoms, and by progressive measures, national and international, to secure the universal and effective recognition and observance, both among the peoples of the member states themselves and among the peoples of territories under their jurisdiction. Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Article 2. Everyone is entitled to all rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or status. Furthermore, there no distinction shall be made on the basis of political, jurisdictional, or international status of the country or territory to which a person belongs, whether it be independent, trust, non-self-governing, or under any other limitation or sovereignty. Article 3. Everyone has a right to life, liberty, and security of person. Article 4. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and all and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. Article 5. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Article 6. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. Article 7. All are equal before the law, are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. All are entitled to equal protection against any discrimination and violation of this declaration and against any incitement to such discrimination. Article 8. Everyone has the right to an effective remedy by the competent national tribunals for acts violating the fundamental rights granted to him by the Constitution or by law. Article 9. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest, detention, or exile. Article 10. Everyone is entitled in full equity to a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal in the determination of his rights and obligations and of any criminal charge against him. Article 11. Everyone charged with a penal offense has a right to be presumed innocent until proved guilty according to law in a public trial, at which he has had all guarantees necessary for his defense. No one shall be held guilty of any penal offense on account of any act or omission which did not constitute a penal offense under national or international law at the time when it was committed. Nor shall a heavier penalty be imposed than the one that was applicable at the time the penal offense was committed. Article 12. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence, nor to attacks upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks. Article 13. Everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country. Article 14. Everyone has the right to seek and enjoy other countries' asylum from persecution. This right may not be invoked in the case of prosecution generally arising from non-political crimes or from acts contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Article 15. Everyone has the right to a nationality. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his nationality nor denied the right to change his nationality. Article 16. Men and women of full age without limitation due to race, nationality, or religion have the right to marry and to found a family. They are entitled to equal rights as to marriage during marriage and its dissolution. Marriage shall be entered into only with the free and full consent of...
Well, you have 5 minutes. You've used your 5 minutes up.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Anyone else? I see no one. We'll go back to the consent calendar. We're asked to pull B2 for a comment, okay? I need a motion for the, if anyone else want to pull anything? Nothing on this side, nothing on this side? Okay. I need a motion for the consent calendar.
Motion to approve.
Okay, I got a motion by Bill O'Brien, second by Dick Montes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. We have a 9:10 public hearing this morning.
Are we going to talk about B2?
Oh, B2, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, sit down for a second.
Sure.
B2. Okay, who's gonna comment on that?
One of the sheriff's representatives. Sorry, I was in the back concentrating.
No, that's no problem.
It was my fault. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Deputy Barry Balance. I've been a member of the Sheriff's Department's K-9 unit for a little over 9 years now. Over the past few years, I've seen our unit grow pretty big, and we're getting calls from all over the country wanting to model their K-9 unit after ours. Yesterday, I got a call from back east wanting to know, you know, how we're making our unit run, how we're making it run so successful. And obviously, yeah, thank the sheriff for his help. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Our ability to be the way we are now is not only from within the Sheriff's Department, but the public support we've been getting lately. Over the past year and a half, the public's came up and helped us. One lady bought all of our canines. We currently have 11 canines, first aid kits, individual to each dog. Our dogs, you know, we put them through a lot every day, and we were relying on a human first aid kit to help our dogs. She came in and donated 11 kits at a little over $3,000, you know, total for the kits. And then recently, we had a gentleman who wished to remain anonymous offer to help replace our aging canine fleet. We currently have two cars that are approaching the end of their lifespan, almost 4 years old, and he wanted to donate enough money to purchase a new canine car so we could take out one of the old canine cars. The reason it's important to us to update our fleet is, I don't know if you guys recall, several years ago in Merced, the canine died from heat exhaustion because the car stalled. In Santa Cruz, a similar issue, canine died because of heat exhaustion in the vehicle. We're trying to prevent that by obviously keeping a new and up-to-date and well-maintained fleet of canine units. And one of the things we want to do is bring this before you guys and, honor the person who made the donation to us and obviously get your approval for acceptance of that donation. And even though he doesn't want to be named, or but we do want to give him recognition of that contribution to our unit. So, any questions for me?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, this was an anonymous donor, so the only thing I can say before we pass on this is thank you, anonymous donor, for what you've done. It was a good gesture, and I for one, and all the rest of this board appreciate it. Okay, we need to accept this.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve down there, Bill O'Brien, seconded by Dick Montes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Okay, now you're on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Excuse me. Good morning, Chairman Mayfield and Board of Supervisors. I'm David Dine with the Stanislaus County Public Works Department. As just stated, this is a public hearing regarding the formation of County Service Area Number 26, Keys, which was initiated in order to provide continued maintenance services for the facilities that will be built by the Keys Storm Drain Project, Phase 2, which is planned to be beginning this next month in May in the area of Keys, and also to provide enhanced maintenance for Keys area parks. The required ballot procedure for formation of County Service Area Number 26 Keys is in compliance with Proposition 218. The deadline to submit or change a CSA number 26 election ballot is at the end of this public hearing. If there is anyone who is here today to submit a ballot, they should do so at this point by giving a ballot to the clerk of the board. If there is anyone here today that needs to change a ballot, which is allowed by Proposition 218, please proceed immediately to the table in the back, and my colleague Norma Canapi will assist you in the back of the room. Chairman Mayfield, do you or the members of the board have any questions regarding the formation of CSA number 26 keys before you open the public hearing?
I see no one.
Okay. And I think we could proceed with the public hearing.
Okay. I'm going to open the public hearing. Is there anyone out there who would like to talk about this matter? Okay, come on down. Just state your name and address, please.
My name is Karen Poppin, 4617 Lucinda Avenue in Keys. Just wanted to speak in favor of forming County Service Area 4 Keys. The entire community will benefit from the increased level of service to maintain the storm drains and the parks. And right now, the full brunt of that is being borne by the residents of the Bright Development. Since the entire community will benefit from those improvements, I feel the entire community should share in the cost of providing them. And I would encourage you to approve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one, close the public hearing, bring it back to the board. Thank you. We'll have this tabulation April 15th.
Yes, sir. Chairman Mayfield, the ballots will be tabulated today at 2 p.m. in the clerk of the board's offices, and the results of this tabulation will be presented to the board at next week's Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, April 15th. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
So we need to take action on this, other than just, we need to vote then, okay? We need to accept this. I need a motion.
I'll move
right here.
I'll move approval.
Okay.
A second.
Okay. Made by Jeff Grover and seconded by Jim DeMartini. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We have a 9:15 public hearing.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Kirk Ford, I'm your interim community development director, and with me is Aaron Farnan, associate planner with the Community Development Department, and we're going to talk about our CDBG program today. I'll turn it over to Aaron.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, County Council members of the board. Your action today to call a public hearing is to consider the staff recommendation to approve the annual action plan, which includes the designation of $109,694 in ESG funds and just over $2.5 million in CDBG funds. These funds are used for activities related to public services provided to income-eligible participants. These public services also include youth, senior, homeless, and food assistance-related programs. Within the communities, there's also fair housing activities that will take place and also involvement in activities related to workforce development, economic development, as well as projects that assist the consortium to rehabilitate the deteriorated community infrastructure. The plan also includes comments and responses, and input to those responses will be addressed in the plan itself.
Thank you. Is there any questions of staff? Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing. Did this relate to what you wanted to talk about?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. Can you answer some of her questions? Somebody other?
Yes, I think we can.
Thank you, Kurt.
Currently, at this point in time, the CDBG program does not have any rehabilitation money assigned to mobile home parks. I'll let Aaron get a little bit further into the details on the programs that we do have.
Currently, we do assign home consortium money to minor and major rehabilitation programs. On the minor home repair program, there is a considerable amount of modular homes and mobile homes that are eligible for assistance. We also use those funds for the lateral connection programs in the Shackford neighborhood and Robson Road neighborhood. That's where they're designated currently.
I think, maybe I'm wrong, I think what she's relating to is that she pays taxes, county taxes, right? For this, and why they shouldn't be, am I right or not, why they shouldn't be included in the update of these. Is that right? Come on up and tell us about it.
Yes, my
pull that thing down to you. That a girl.
Okay. Well, my point is that not only do we pay taxes, that our homes, which are our personal property, like your car or something, not real property, are used as part of the low-income housing stock in order to, you know, whatever amount has to do with the money you get for the low-income housing, but yet we seem to be kind of on the fringes of the benefits of that, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
So because we own our homes, but we don't own the property, it puts us in the usual precarious position. And I don't find that there's really anything in place for people who qualify for rehabilitation funds for their mobile homes. And at the same time, in the county area, there's no rent stabilization, which means the park owners can raise the rent, you know, like astronomically. And so and majority of the people are in a low income. And so you don't have funds left to do the things that are needed, you know, to keep your home in a good condition.
What I can say is that the CDBG funds are usually tied to very specific grant programs that we get from the federal government, and they have very specific guidelines. Often the CDBG funds are focused on single-family dwellings that are made out of bricks and mortar and sticks and not necessarily mobile home parks. The CDBG grant program also does not provide any benefits to the mobile home owners. I think you...
That's what I'm talking about, the mobile home park, the park and the park owner. You know, that's a whole different...
Yeah, I don't believe we have any programs at all that would benefit mobile home park owners. Certainly, as we look through the possible grants that are out there, we can look to see if there are any programs where we can get some grant funding that might be able to assist the mobile home owners. But at this point, we don't have any grants that specifically allow that. Aaron, do you have anything else to add to that?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, then I'll go back to my original statement. If you're using all personal property as part of your low-income housing stock, in other words, you're counting it, mm-hmm. you know, by a few, I think.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is that right now there's no program. They can look for some programs.
Well, I understand what he's saying. But this has been going on for years, that they're using our personal property to up the count on the low-income housing stock in order to get, you know, a few extra bucks, which is fine. That's great, but as you can see, we're not included in that.
Bill O'Brien, you got something.
Well, no, just clarification. This is the grant rule and not the county rule.
At this point, yes.
So we couldn't use it if we wanted to.
I see. In other words, you couldn't...
We couldn't direct it towards the mobile homes because it's coming from the federal guidelines saying you can't use it for mobile homes.
We don't have the authority to change what the federal government...
Well, okay. I see that. All right.
We do use it for the mobile homes in a minor rehabilitation manner. And we have a wait list and we contract the housing authority to do that, but the amount of funds we have are so small that we can only address them as the list as they come up one at a time.
Can you explain what minor is?
Yes. Minor home rehabilitation program is up to $10,000 for health and safety related items.
Right.
And we do usually help about 8 to 10 families a year, and about a third of those are modular homes and mobile homes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, just a second. When she stays, you get up here.
Yeah. It's
thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, it kind of sort of answers my, it doesn't solve.
It doesn't sound like it answers it.
But it, more or less.
That's what we're here for. Okay, come on up.
Okay, my question is...
what's your name?
Sally Studer.
Okay, Sally.
My question is in the housing element that's expiring now, It is in there that the state requires a certain portion of, because of you getting the low income, because you're qualifying for your low income housing, that the requirement is that a certain portion of the funding that you receive, it goes into rehabilitating units, and mobile homes is listed in there as a separate entity. And yet still, by these figures here, I'm hearing 8 total houses per year, and only a portion of that are mobile homes, and we have over 2,000 in the county.
Yep.
It seems very unproportionate to me.
Okay.
Our designation for the bricks and mortar type projects are home, and we only get about just over $270,000 for that type of activity. Home money is usually used for bricks and mortar, like to actual units, and then CDBG is usually public services and more infrastructure related. And usually they work together to meet those needs, but we're not the umbrella for home. The city of Turlock is, and we're just a consortium member.
Okay. Again, it's probably an issue of there is a huge need out there, absolutely, mm-hmm. and we only have a certain amount of money that comes in through these programs that we can allocate every year. And yeah, 8 to 10 houses is about all we can do per year.
Okay. Thank you.
And today is not home money. We're not talking home money at all today.
No.
Well, any other questions? Is anyone else? Okay, Miguel, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You will slip a copy of the paper that I presented. You have a copy of you, sir? It's 4 pages. Yes, sir. I present myself many times to the board supervisor. I think it was 2 times already from the board supervisor, and 1 time to the max of the South Modesto area in regard to the needs and the money is supposed to be allocated to the areas regarding the CDBG funds. In regard to the page 1 of the section 1, it said it's supposed to describe the geographic area of the jurisdiction where you're supposed to serve and give money, and to mention the low-income families and the racial minority concentration and which the assistance would to be directed. And the proposal, I don't know if you had that package, and this proposal it never mentioned, only mentioned the county, but never mentioned the specific area like Ceres, Patterson, Turlock, Modesto South, and the county. Breakdown of the minorities and low-income families directly. So I'm sending this letter to the office of San Francisco and Fresno office of field office in regard to from the complaint and comment, because I feel that this package is not addressing specific in regard to the issue of the federal request under the 24 CFR 91 point and 105 point is not being directly according to the federal guidelines. The second part is the I said before, I present myself many times, and according to the mandate of the citizen participation, I never received no response in regard to my writing that I present to you 2 times in the board supervisor, and according to the mandate of the federal guidelines and the citizen participation, is supposed to say yes or no, or what is the not what response to provide in writing in regard to the comments that was accepted or the reason why not was accepted. And I see that in this report, the citizen comment on my comment. Very brief, only saying that we have meetings in there and the citizens say something, but nothing specific. And according to the state federal guidelines, that you have to write there precisely what the citizens say. And it's not there and not here. Mr. Chairman, I'm feel that the purpose of the civil participation under federal guidelines is for the citizens to come and explain and say things that need to be done in according to the needs in regard to the CDBG funds. But at the same time, you look that staff are not sensitive enough they want to help the citizen to become more involved when this is a mandate for the federal guidelines. So I'm very concerned that we are not be lessened or have the results of the recommendation from the staff, regardless of what the presentation of the citizen was there. And to me, it's very essential. So I'm going to send this letter in form of complaint because this, under the citizen participation, the county is not in compliance. The number three issue is the, and one letter that I sent, I give it to you, that I present myself in April 1st. One of the concerns that we have is that this paper, I just got it Friday, this ballot of the proposal is so big that you in one day to come from Friday, Sunday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and Tuesday, no way you can understand and read this thing easily. For you to do comments, this is very difficult. And I have experience almost 4 years reading this proposal, but the average person cannot, in the meeting they're supposed to present, to make the presentation for the citizen to discuss whatever the needs. So it's very difficult. So I mentioned in one of the letters, it's supposed to make another meeting so that people can understand and the staff to explain to the residents or citizens that are going to be involved in the city in participation, the process, how the CDG work with the funds, the year fund before, the coming from the public, and this thing not here, sir. Thank you very much.
Is there any way that this paper he showed us could be produced 2 weeks ahead of time?
Actually, I believe it was produced a month ago. We brought this.
It was a month ago. Okay, Kurt.
We brought this item before the board about a month ago.
Okay.
And had the document available for public review.
Okay.
30-day comment period, which is ending today with this public hearing.
Okay. Well, where could he pick that up? A month ago, he could have picked it up.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you know, at some point, Miguel, that if it's available a month ahead of time, you have plenty of time to pick it up. Did you know that you could pick it up?
No, sir.
Okay, well, you know now that usually these things are about a month ahead of time, so you could pick it up and you got a whole month.
Okay, but at the same time, sir, I'm talking about technical assistance from staff for the average person to understand that I'm not a professional CDBG writer or proposal, so it's impossible, even you give it to me in a month, no way you can understand and have the statistics. The only issue is the lack of the statistics in regard to the census tract and when the service is being provided and the ethnic participation or the ethnic that reflect for the minorities in low income. Here you don't reflect nothing. So how I can come here and explain to you and ask for the need assessment or the need that we're supposed to have when we are not appear in this proposal?
Okay.
And that's my point, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else out there? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the board.
I'd like to move approval of the five staff recommendations.
Second. Okay, it's been moved by Jeff Grover, seconded by Bill O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0.
Thank you.
We have another 920. Will we go to the redevelopment agency?
Yes.
Are you the man, too?
Apparently, I am.
Okay.
I am the interim executive director of the redevelopment agency.
Okay.
And with me is Anna Rocha, who will provide the staff report to you. We're actually got a consent calendar and a few other items to take care of this in the agency, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, we call this to order, and this we go to the consent calendar.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
Okay, I need a second.
Second.
Who said that?
I did.
Okay. There we go. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried 5-0. We go down to correspondence.
We have none.
We go down to public hearing? None. Yes, sir. Okay, we have agenda items. Approval, do we need to move on that? What?
Actually, there is one item that we do need you to hear, and that is approval.
B?
That is item B, yes.
B, okay.
6B. and Anna will provide you with a report.
Okay.
Good morning, agency members. My name is Anna Rocha, planner for the Redevelopment Agency. What you have for you today is a funding request for housing rehabilitation in one of the redevelopment sub-areas, the airport neighborhood, to be specific. The funding request is being received from Habitat for Humanity for $199,575. It is for the rehabilitation of four properties in the airport neighborhood. Before you, you're seeing pictures of their present state. That's one on Del Mar Court. Again, Del Mar Court, Tanea Drive. Another one on Tanea Drive, and we have another one on 510 Benson. As you can see, they're around, they're in close proximity to each other. Staff recommends approval of this recommendation. Again, this is to rehab four properties in the airport neighborhood for a total of $199,575. What you're seeing a lot right now is a lot of properties that are substandard, and we're working together with Habitat in a partnership to remove blight in this area. So this is one step forward in maintaining and moving forward on your goals for the agency. Any questions?
I have one. The county will have the fiscal oversight of the entire project, correct?
Yes. What we'll be doing is doing a silent lien on the properties. So basically, we will hold over each property a certain amount that will be used for the rehab. So, and we'll be getting receipts, and they will be dispersed the money appropriately.
Okay. But county has oversight to make sure it's all used properly?
Yes. County will remain, or agency will remain with oversight.
There you go.
Any other questions? Yeah, you can come on up. Come on up, Bill.
Mr. Chairman, I strongly support the concept because we need housing for low-income families, and I think it's an excellent recommendation for Mrs. Rocha to be able to bring the rehabilitation or make up of these houses, because we need it for the low-income families in the area and any part of the county. So I'm strongly support the idea to do that, sir.
You're fully supportive, right?
Pardon me?
You fully support this.
Yes, sir.
You're a good man. Thank you.
Thank you. Long time, right?
Okay. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? Okay, now do we need to make a motion, don't we?
Don't move.
Don't
move that way.
Okay, I got a motion by Dick.
I'll second.
Second by Jeff Grover. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried 5-0. Okay with that?
Thank you, Supervisor.
You have a public forum as item 7.
Okay, public forum.
Nobody to speak?
Apparently none. Then you can adjourn.
Okay, you're done?
I'm done.
Okay.
We're done.
Okay, but then we'll go back to the board meeting, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We go down, was it B4 or B5? We're down to B5.
Yes.
Down to B5? I think we're going to hear about health today. We got three of my favorite people up here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dean.
Mayfield, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Dorian. Thank you for allowing us to come before you today to present the 2008.
Speak up a little bit. We had another girl. That's it.
Thank you for allowing us to come before you today to talk about the Public Health 2008 report. But before we start, I would like to, before I remiss in doing so, thank the staff who works diligently and hard to make us product what it is, and a special thanks to our director, Marianne Lee, and Ms. Cynthia Thomason from the CEO's office in Patty Hill, for without their support and help, we would not be presenting today. So thank them very much. And while we're before you, we are responsible, we are the mandated department for public health is the mandated local department under the governance of the Board of Supervisors. As such, it is our responsibility to keep you apprised of issues that relate to health and concerns within Stanislaus County. And that's what we're doing. We particularly do so this time of the year because this represents Public Health Week. And it is being recognized nationally, and it's an opportunity for all local, state, and national departments of health to discuss those issues that are related to the health of a community. Today we are going to just update you on some of the accomplishments. We won't talk about everything Public Health has been doing, but also some of the opportunities, challenges, and future plans of the department. When we spoke to you last year, we talked a little bit about reorganizing the department. And as a part of that, we updated our mission statement and wanted to bring it before you today and talk about the functions of the health department. The mission is to promote, protect, and improve the health of the community through leadership, partnership, and innovation. The core functions of the health department are assessment, which we'll discuss a little bit later, policy development, and assurance. But what we thought we would do is talk a little bit about the financial history of the health department. When we come before you, we are always saying what the limitations are in terms of our ability to move and to regarding issues as they come up, some of the challenges that we face. And we thought, what better way to explain it than through the financial history. The total revenue for the health department has increased over the year. What we decided to do is to go back and take a snapshot from 1980 to today in terms of, so you can see what has happened in terms of our funding. Our funding has increased from 47% of categorical funding in 1980 to 91% in 2007. So the ability to be as flexible is not there as it was in 1980. However, there's less discretion for comprehensive program planning and activities. We do have new funding streams, including emergency preparedness, which you've heard a lot about, and some limited funding for chronic disease prevention. The essential services that public health is responsible for, under those core functions, the three core functions, we have 10 essential services. And those essential services you have in your book, I won't read them all, but they are the responsibility that have been set to local public health departments through NACHO, the National Association of City and County Health Officials, CDC, and other legislative bodies. The essential services are performed to meet the public's need according to demographics and health concerns. And to look at our population, the age group, as you can see, our 0-5 population is about 9.4%. The same, a little bit less than our 65-year-old population, which is 10.1%. The largest percent is 20-44. With 45-64 age and the 21.7%. And this, we know this may be a little bit difficult to view, but we just wanted to show you what has been happening since 1980, 90, and 2000 in terms of the growing population. We have births that are twice the number of deaths, and those of us who are in the baby boomer generation are aging. Those, I should say, are aging. And so our population is continuing to grow. Therefore, the diversity is not just in age, gender, and other demographic criteria. The one of the things we wanted to talk about was the infant mortality rate as we get into some of the health issues. As you know, we've talked a lot about infant mortality, and we have a program that's funded by the Children and Families Commission. And that's the Healthy Birth Outcomes Program. But what we're talking about today is the findings of the infant mortality study that they also supported in terms of funding to look at that. We had a two-year infant mortality study. The rate of births in Santa Cruz County right now is 7.3 per 1,000 births. And what we found during the two-year study, the problems, some of the problems with infant mortality are prematurity, babies born too soon, drug use during pregnancy, susceptibility of vulnerable populations, and that's a whole host of socioeconomic problems, and lack of support, and also inadequate health care, prenatal care. And what we've identified as potential solutions, and we've been working with providers and in the community and community-based groups, we're looking at screenings, and this has been approved through the provider population, screen for STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, and the drug use of pregnant women to ensure that no fetus is born with a drug problem or infant mortality as a result of the drug use. Enhancing prenatal care services, and we're doing that through our community partners as well as our own public health outreach staff, trying to ensure that women are identified and get into prenatal care as soon as possible. Providing community education regarding healthy pregnancies, how to maintain and sustain a healthy pregnancy and the importance of a healthy pregnancy to the infant's life. And also to continue work with the healthcare community to augment the systems change. There are changes that within systems that present barriers that we are addressing with them. And those are the solutions that we've determined will assist us in ensuring that infants do have an opportunity to enjoy life. Next, I will turn it over to Ms. Phoebe Leong, and she will be talking about emerging health issues.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Goring. Phoebe Leong, Assistant Director of the Health Services Agency. As Clee has mentioned, not only has the demographic trends and population size changed in our community over the past decades, there are also new concerns affecting the health of our community. For one, emergency preparedness was deemed a public health responsibility after 9/11, and over the years it has evolved from protecting the public from terrorist attacks to preparing the public for an emergency or a disaster, such as the flood, a wildfire, a pandemic flu, or most recently the extreme heat incident that happened a couple of years ago. We have infectious disease, which is on the rise, and recently MRSA has created a scare in our community. Also, there continues to be a high prevalence of chronic diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, and obesity in our county. So is the prevalence of asthma, especially in children. In addition, the most recent health alert is the link between lung disease and premature labor. And you've heard Clee talk about the infant mortality, so it's all linked and related. With these new health issues affecting many of our county's population, public health's approach to address these concerns is to focus on population-based prevention strategies. Research has indicated that the traditional individual health education or the individual-based health education strategy to increase individual knowledge or awareness will not be effective in prevention unless the person is able and willing to apply the acquired knowledge into practice and that the practice is supported by the community and our society. This means that we have to work at all levels of prevention, involving not only the individual, but also stakeholders and partners, our community, the healthcare providers, the schools, and policymakers. This year's report highlights how some of our programs utilize this approach to meet the core functions of public health, and I'm just going to share a couple of them with you. Regarding chronic diseases, heart health, diabetes, and obesity remain to be our top three concerns. Our county continues to be ranked one of the worst counties within the state in the death rates due to heart disease. And this rate is relatively higher than the state's average as well. Diabetes is termed the silent epidemic, and our county's rate has been very high, even compared to our neighboring counties of San Joaquin and Merced. The adult obesity rate in our county is over 60%, and the children's obesity rate is about 34%. So again, it's relatively high. And then there are yet other emerging health issues, which is oral health, which affects a lot of our children in the community. So for the last few years, public health has taken a more coordinated and comprehensive effort to address the prevention of chronic diseases, reaching the many different levels of prevention utilizing long-term strategies.
how do we do it? Our efforts focus on affecting behavioral change through the entire public health system. Public health values and utilizes the partnerships we built and nurtured, the many coalitions that we have established. Since we address childhood obesity, the Heart Coalition, which has been very active since its inception in 1999, for this year, they are sponsoring the Walk It Out program in 5 of the Modesto City Schools after school program. In this program, children are encouraged to walk for at least 15 minutes a day, at least 3 times a week. But it's so successful that all the children are walking every day and they're keeping track of how many miles they have walked. And in addition, all the Modesto City Schools after school program have adopted this program because they felt that it is a way to prevent childhood obesity. Also, we are engaging our grassroots community through the Healthy Eating Active Living Initiative that's funded by Kaiser Permanente. We are involving the community residents, corner stores in the neighborhood, the schools, and business owners in the West Modesto neighborhood to promote and sustain healthy lifestyle behaviors by encouraging systems change. Such would include encouraging corner stores to sell more fresh produce to its residents, assisting neighborhoods to form walking clubs, and also working with the City of Modesto and other organizations to build a walking trail in the neighborhood. We also work with healthcare providers, such as sending out health alerts by our health officer on important health issues, and the latest being an alert on the oral health issue, and also holding provider education sessions. We encourage organizations and employers to adopt practices which support healthy employees. And we have been collaborating with organizations in the implementation of healthy policies or health policies, such as implementing the nutrition policy with the schools, districts, and also the outdoor smoking policy with the city parks. Again, our goal is to foster and encourage systems change to affect long-term results. Another program I want to highlight is the Child Health and Disability Prevention Program. This is also known as, by many, the Well Child Program. It provides health screening for children from 0 to 21 of age, where each child who is eligible for this program is provided with a comprehensive screening exam to identify any preventable and treatable health problems. When a health problem is identified, the child will be referred to a physician or a specialist for treatment. We also have the CHCD Gateway Program, which is an automated pre-enrollment process to assess and assist with a child's health coverage. A child can go to any CHCD providers in our county and receive assistance from the Gateway Program, which helps them with getting health coverage. There are many CHCD providers in our county, and through our local collaborative efforts, eligible children have been receiving quality health care. So next I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Walker, who's going to talk about MRSA.
Good morning. Before I proceed, I'd like to make an introduction. I'd like to introduce you to our new Assistant Public Health Officer. Stand, please. The board members, this is Dr. Janlyn Funamura. I know several of you got to meet her before the meeting. She's a pediatrician who is a product of the Valley. In fact, her grandmother was born in Modesto. All of her training has been in California. Before coming to us, she was Assistant Public Health Officer in San Joaquin County, and we're really blessed to have her. So welcome, Dr. Funamura. I would like to take some time to talk to you specifically about what's been called a superbug. And I know there's been a lot of concern in the community, and I really thought the board should have some clear history about what has happened here. I'm going to go a little out of the order here, and I'm going to start with healthcare associated. In terms of the history, back in March of 2001, we formed the Stanislaus County Communicable Disease Task Force. And this is really a broad collaborative that has included infection control professionals from hospitals, has included some of our infectious disease specialists, has included, obviously, our CD team from public health, has included representation from the jail medical unit, has included the school nurses, and more recently has included representation of the health plans in a broad collaborative effort to look at emerging issues. And one of the first issues that we looked at was healthcare-associated MRSA. And this is the form that generally has become an issue in our healthcare facilities, both acute and chronic, and really emerged in the 80s. And we looked at it. And when you see the statistics about deaths related to this superbug, most of them are related to the healthcare-associated form because it tends to affect those with complex and chronic medical illnesses. Now, that is to be contrasted with community-associated. It's very important to understand that distinction because we have a lot of worried parents who hear about this superbug. And most of what we hear about in our schools and in young people is related to the community-associated type, and that form is rarely fatal. Next slide, please. We just wanted to update you on some of the activities just last year in an effort to focus on community awareness and provider education. We distributed brochures. Earlier, we had done so within the school system, but last year, we also focused on child care providers. We have continued to provide fax broadcasts to health care providers and work with the local school system as regards new guidance documents. Next, please. Wanted to end by talking about some of the challenges. Obviously, as Clee shared with you, one of our big challenges over the years compared to 1980 is more categorical funding. I know you're well aware of that because that happens in your budgetary decisions. And because of categorical funding, it limits our ability to implement some of the new programs for some of our newer challenges. The other issue is that it takes time to see results in prevention, especially with issues of chronic disease. In some cases, it may take a decade, sometimes a generation. But the return on the investment has been well documented. For every dollar invested in preventive programs, the return on that dollar is $6. That's a pretty good investment. Also, it takes a long time to affect change. And you see that term there, environmental. That goes back to something that Phoebe was talking about a little earlier. She was talking about it as regards obesity. But the best example we can share with you is the enormous progress that we've had in smoking cessation. When you look at the fact that California has the lowest rate of smoking of any state in America, it's not just because of saying, just say no, or don't do it, or it's bad for your health. When we talk about this issue of environmental change, it means it also involves policy, the laws that prohibit smoking in restaurants or smoke-free workplaces or the taxes on tobacco or the issue of limitations to minors or the fact that you cannot buy it out of a machine anymore or the fact that in the grocery store it's behind glass. These are the kinds of environmental changes that result in change. And it's those same kinds of things that Phoebe and Clee are talking about in terms of making a change and an improvement in these disturbing statistics that we've shared with you. Next slide. We do have opportunities, and we're excited about those opportunities. And that's the work that we've been doing within county departments and with community organizations to look at comprehensive responses and to affect change, as well as involving community residents and community-based organizations in our efforts. And then the other opportunity is accreditation, and I really have to credit Clee Moore for her leadership and vision in this regard, because the reality is that
There is a very strong national movement toward accreditation of public health departments, just like hospitals have to have accreditation. And one of the issues there is, remember when Klee shared it with you about our changes in funding, or our increases in funding, a lot of that comes from state and federal and philanthropic grants, and accreditation may be one of the requirements in the future. So this is very important, and we've gotten a head start in that regard. Next slide. In terms of moving ahead, what about the future? Where are we going? What are our plans? We are continuing to work on our strategic planning, and we hope next year to bring you an update in that regard. We continue to look at our organizational structure with a goal to having a fluid and flexible structure to respond to these public needs. We continue to address chronic disease prevention. And then last, look at preventive strategies at all levels. And one of the things that we have incorporated is what's called the spectrum of prevention. As I shared with you earlier, it's not just about individual behavior. It's about institutions. It's about businesses. It's about public policy. And if we're going to make a difference for infant mortality, or for childhood obesity, or for asthma, or for heart disease, or for MRSA, we're going to need to use the entire spectrum of prevention. Thank you very much.
I would like to stress also, in terms of policy, that's where you play a part. And one of the critical things, we wanted to alert you to something that's happening right now. Dr. Walker just sent a press release. In this county, we have had 12 infant deaths in this first quarter. And that's not due to prematurity. It's due to the situations in which families live and having families crowded and sleeping with infants. And so it's not due to us. It's the coroner, Christy Kerr, is who we would like to give credit to for alerting us to what's going on in terms of that. But again, the policy decisions that the board makes in terms of helping inform the community about those concerns is really important. But we thank all of you for allowing us to come before you today. And if there are any questions.
Thank you. Bill has one?
I have a couple. First, can we talk about infant mortality a little more for a second? Is that report done? I was on the Prop 10 committee when we first initiated that report.
Yes.
And a lot of the hypothesis with all the causes was just what you had stated. So did the report clarify that is what the causes are?
Those were the findings.
And how are we correlating? Because other counties that had similar drug use, similar low access to health care, didn't have quite the same infant mortality rate as we do.
Well, the infant mortality rate is high in others, particularly in the Valley. And what we're finding is we thought it was due to the increase of meth, but it's not necessarily so. Alcohol use is the highest culprit in terms of infant mortality related to pregnancy, but we know that other drugs are also a factor. And so there are many factors, many drugs related to
it. I'd like a copy of that report if you could forward it to me. And the second, OCB, on the obesity, you talked about Modesto City Schools after school program and the walking and so forth. Has there been any movement to incorporate that into the regular school session rather than just after school?
This year, the Heart Coalition is working on our next year's focus, and there has been talk about incorporating that into the regular school day and also into other school districts over the Modesto City Schools.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And then I just want to compliment the Public Health Department for working with the nutritional guidelines of school lunches. Although it may meet federal guidelines, there's a lot of room to move. So I appreciate your help in that.
Jim?
Yes, I just would like to compliment you on this report. This is a very good report, and I really like the historical perspective that we have that something is different than what's been presented in past reports and the evolution of public health. These reports are very good, so it's much better than what we got a few years ago. Last year's was very good, too. It gives us a pretty detailed idea of where we are in public health. So I just wanted to compliment you on the thoroughness of the report.
Dick, you got something you want? Job well done.
Thanks.
Thank you, Cleo. I think Dr. Walker. We need to accept this. I need a motion.
I move approval of this report.
Second by Jim DeMartini. I'm moved by Jeff Cover. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you again. Thank the board. Okay. We go down to correspondence.
This board has received a notice from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services requesting comment on a variety of species that are currently protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act.
I refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources, but I'd also send a copy to the Fish and Wildlife Committee, would you?
Yes.
I'd like to do that.
This board has received a notice of date change from the California Fish and Game Commission for the public hearing regarding the proposed regulatory action related to nuisance Canadian geese.
Refer this to the Department of Parks and Recreation and the Fish and Wildlife Committee. We just got them built up. I hope we don't start thinking they're predatory and we'll start killing them.
And this board has received a claim.
Go ahead, Christine.
And this board has received a claim as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge the receipt of claim and refer to the Chief Executive's Office. Is there anything from the fiscal? Don't we have the
under board report? I'd just like that.
Oh, wait a minute here. Just a minute. I'll get to you, Jeff. Okay. Is there any board reports? Yes.
There's a question of the CEO. Do we have a date with the report back to the board regarding the retention of services by psychiatrists for our MIAs that weren't covered under our HSA department?
Good question. We have not set a date certain yet. That group did meet again yesterday to continue to develop programs. We're discussing three potential options, one which would leave in residence the program in HSA with support out of the psychiatric health facility, BHRS. Second one would locate it at BHRS as a standalone program, and then the third would be a hybrid. We'd expect it back in the next couple weeks.
Okay, and we had a 60-day window.
Yes.
I would like to hear the options before we get to 60 days.
Right, me too. In fact, I'm just going to ask you that we will make the 60-day option that we have.
Yes, we will absolutely make the 60-day window that you had established. We will provide it far enough in advance that you can send us back for refinements. We're looking closely at the fiscal implications of each of the different issues so we can provide to you the most complete report.
Okay. G. Martini, you got something for us this morning?
Just to remind everybody, the property taxes are due by Thursday. I was down there this morning and paid mine, and there was no line. And it's very convenient.
Why would you want to talk about that?
Well, you know, I don't want anybody to have to pay that 10% penalty because they forgot.
Oh, okay, Jim, okay.
My manager forgot last year. So.
Oh, did they hit your pocketbook? Well, if you forgot to pay them on time, they hit your pocketbook, didn't they?
10%. That was my manager, not me.
Okay.
I told him to be sure to pay it this year because we'd already got the money.
Okay, Jim. That's all you got?
That's it.
Okay, Dick, how about you?
I'm fine.
Okay, Bill O'Brien, you got something?
I don't think I can top Jim's comments. So. Just remind you, your income taxes are due.
Okay. Okay. Is there any legislative and fiscal management report by our Chief Executive Officer?
No, not today.
Nothing. We have a closed session today, County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have one item to discuss in closed session today. This is a conference under real property negotiation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. The property under discussion is the Crow's Landing Air Facility at the intersection of Ike Crow Road and Bell Road in the unincorporated area of Stanislaus County. The agency negotiator is Richard Robinson, and the lessee negotiator is PCCP West Park, LLC. And under negotiation is both the lease terms and lease payments. We don't expect there will be any report out from this particular closed session.
Okay, was that point 8 at the very last?
That's right.
Okay, point 8.
Okay.
With that, we're adjourned.